Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. So, as always, a busy show ahead of us tonight. At his home in Malahide in North County Dublin, we've got Dr. Richard Collins. Richard, all okay out there?
Everything fine, Derek.
Good to hear it. Now let's go to, I think he's in Florence in Italy. The last time we spoke to him, he was in the south of France. This man is getting around. It's Niall Hatch.
Hi, Derek. Hi, Richard. Yes, that's right. I'm in beautiful Tuscany at the moment, having a wonderful time in the city of Florence. Remarkable place. It's my first time here. So I thought, yeah, why not check it out? It's not too far, really, from the south of France. It's easily traveled here, to travel here by train or by car. So why not? Wonderful place, I have to say.
I wouldn't have thought it was the first place on your bucket list if you wanted to see wildlife, or maybe I'm wrong.
Italy does tend to get overlooked a lot by people who are going on wildlife tours or to see wildlife abroad. Certainly when you look at other southern European peninsulas, you look like places like Iberia or the Balkans, they do have a lot more biodiversity, especially when it comes to birds and butterflies and reptiles and so on. That's not to say that Italy doesn't have a lot going for it. It does have a lot of variety in terms of the Alps in the north and the big mountains also down the centre. Then down the very south, you have some of those more southern European species. It's quite good. It has a unique species of squirrel, for example, just in the south of Italy, the Calabrian black squirrel, nowhere near Florence. But yes, it wouldn't be first on everyone's list, I suppose, for wildlife watching in Europe.
Did you see any wolves on your travels? As you know, we both work on Back from the Brink for RT Television, and we featured the wolves' return to Italy many times.
I haven't seen them. I would love to. It's certainly was very interesting, the experience working on that programme with you, Derek, and with all the team in RT Cork, and with my colleagues, actually, in the BirdLife International partner in Italy called LIPU. It's the partner of Birdwatch Ireland over here in Italy, because they do a lot of work with wolves as well. The wolves seem to have been very well accepted because they are helping to control the wild boar that are encroaching on the city of Rome. So Rome particularly is where those wolves are coming in, and also the mountains in the sort of centre part of Italy. Not so much around Florence just yet, but the fact is they don't seem to be causing major problems. In fact, a lot of people are seeing them as a real benefit, controlling something potentially much worse in the case of the wild boar.
What about bird life? So anything of interest there in that part of the world?
Well, it was interesting just strolling around Florence today. It was a lovely sunny day, then turned to torrential rain in the evening. But there were a lot of the migrant birds are gone. There's some type of swallows around, though, still. Birds called crag martins, and they're nesting, until recently, but they're residents, so they stay around as a member of the swallow family. They nest around the wonderful cathedral, one of the most impressive buildings I've ever seen in my whole life, right in the centre of Florence. So it was interesting to see them around there, see lots of pigeons and so on. But actually, the bird that I'm most taken with here is one that I suppose is very underappreciated, very overlooked by a lot of people, and people maybe don't realise just how special it is. That's a lovely little bird called the Italian sparrow.
Is a sparrow not a sparrow? Why is it an Italian one? Why is it any different to an Irish one or a Spanish one for that matter?
Well, it's a species in its own right. So the sparrows that we have in Ireland, the one most people will be familiar with is the house sparrow. We also have the tree sparrow, which is a member of the same genus. The genus is called Passer, and that will become relevant in a moment when I tell you the origin of that. There's a different species found in other parts of southern Europe, North Africa, into the Middle East, called the Spanish sparrow. Despite its name, it's not confined just to Spain, although it does occur there. And it's quite common in some parts of the Canary Islands as well. People may have seen it there. It's very like our house sparrow. So describe that first of all. So if you look at the male house sparrow that we have, he's sort of greyish cheeks, a sort of black bib coming down onto his chest, brown at the sides of his head, but the top of his crown is a wonderful grey colour. It kind of offsets, quite a contrast. You see that quite clearly. The Spanish sparrow, it looks very like a male house sparrow, but what it has whiter cheeks, not so much grey, they're gleaming white, and it doesn't have any grey on top of its head. It has entirely chestnut crown on top of its head, and then black streaks that go like chevrons, really, going all the way down the flanks of the bird and onto the chest. It's a very attractive bird. It kind of looks, you look at it and think, that's a sparrow, but it looks a bit different. The Italian sparrow is intermediate between the two of those. It has the head of the Spanish sparrow with the white cheeks and the chestnut crown, but it has the body of the house sparrow without any of that black streaking that goes down the flanks. And people thought, well, it's probably a hybrid between those two species. And genetically, it turns out it actually is a hybrid between those two species, but a hybrid that happened a long, long time ago and has now become stable. And it only really reproduces with itself. It's evolved into its own niche. And therefore, it's one of very, very few examples in the whole vertebrate world world, so in the whole animal kingdom, of a species coming about through hybridization. Something that's very common in the plant kingdom, but in the animal kingdom, it's very, very rare. There's only a couple of other birds where that's been proven or suspected. One bird is called the Pomeranian skua. Another one is called the Steller's eider. There are two others that came around by hybridization, but they're the only ones that are known of. But the classic studies into this are, and teaching us so much about evolution, are the Italian sparrow, so common in Italy, but really just confined pretty much to the Italian peninsula, a little bit into southeastern France, a little bit into Slovenia, a little bit into Switzerland, but only just by a few kilometres. The other thing that I really like about the Italian sparrow is that it's a bird that would have been very familiar to the ancient Romans. You could see it, for example, on some of the mosaics and paintings that are on the walls in Pompeii, for example. So we know that the Romans knew this bird very, very well. And they're perfectly illustrated there with the chestnut crown and the white cheeks. It's an Italian sparrow. That's the bird that they knew in Latin as passer, P-A-S-S-E-R. So the whole genus, that our house sparrow, the tree sparrow, the Spanish sparrow, passer, it comes from that bird. The original passer, the Italian sparrow. But not just that. That is also the Latin name that's given to the whole group called the passerines, the songbirds, the perching birds. It makes up about half of all the birds on Earth. And I think it's really kind of cool that this vast assemblage of birds are all ultimately named after this one seemingly little insignificant little species found really only in Italy. So that's kind of cool.
I hope I'm at a table quiz when that comes up some night. That's real Twitcher territory, I can tell you, Niall. Richard, have you ever seen one?
Yes, I have. Yes, you do see them in Italy, and it's like the Spanish sparrow. It's a scruffy devil, though, really. The sparrow I love is the tree sparrow. It's so elegant, a beautiful little creature. And I used to ring a lot of them when they were plentiful, and they were special birds. Even in the hand, there was a totally different feel to them than the others. But the one I'd love to see is the Dead Sea Sparrow. Have you seen that, Niall?
I've not been lucky enough to see the Dead Sea Sparrow yet, Richard, and what a fantastic name that is, by the way. It tells you where it comes from, of course. It's a bird of the Middle East and the Near East, from very arid regions. I have seen the also very aptly named Desert Sparrow in North Africa. That's a relative of the house sparrow and the Spanish sparrow. But I'm actually with you there. But my favourite sparrow of all is like yours, Richard. It's the tree sparrow. I think there's something very smart, very elegant about them. It's a bird that has been declining in Ireland, very much associated with certain types of farmland. Very pretty little bird. It has this lovely chestnut crown and a black spot on its white cheeks. That's how you tell it apart from the house sparrow, this black spot. It always looks to me like it's wearing a motorcycle helmet. That's just how I remember it. What's very interesting, though, is all the other sparrows we've been talking about, including the Italian sparrow, the house sparrow, the Spanish sparrow, the Dead Sea sparrow, the males and females look completely different from each other, particularly on the head pattern. It's a totally different colour. For some reason, the male and the female tree sparrow look exactly the same. There's no sexual dimorphism between them. The male and female look identical. I'm not quite sure why that is the case, why it's the only one of these sparrows, in this part of the world at least, where there is no difference between the male and the female. Do you have any thoughts on that, Richard?
I don't know why that should be, and it is a very radical difference. And if you go to Beijing, for instance, there are lots of sparrows, but they're tree sparrows, not the common house sparrow. The house sparrow is there as well, but the ones you see are the tree sparrows. I wonder which of the birds in that galaxy of sparrows, it was the great innovator, the one that 12,000 years ago cottoned on that humanity was there to be made use of and exploited, and that by moving in and living around people, they would prosper. I was tempted to think it's a house sparrow, but it probably wasn't. But I wonder, does anyone know which of the sparrows cottoned onto that first? Because it was an enormously successful move on their part. They have prospered and spread throughout most of the world now.
Well, apparently there's something like 1 billion sparrows on the planet. How many people are there nowadays? Is it 8.5 billion or something like that, and 1 billion sparrows? But is it the most numerous bird in the world, Niall, do you know?
It depends on how you. It depends on how you define. Well, if you're looking at domestic birds, it is or domestic and wild together. It would be the domestic chicken. Billions and billions and billions of those on the planet with us.
That's
at any
domesticated.
One time.
That's on scale.
That's
we're
domesticated.
About the wild ones. The wild ones.
The wild bird with the biggest population is a bird that looks quite like a sparrow. It's from parts of sub-Saharan Africa. Very widespread there. It goes by the name of the red-billed quelea, and it also occurs in flocks sometimes of millions, well, even hundreds of millions, no. that sort of expand in response to weather and to climate situations. So that's even more numerous than the house sparrow. The house sparrow, of course, has been aided by humans because it was transported all around the world, including famously into North America, where there was it was brought there by a thing called an acclimatization society. And their stated aim was to introduce into North America all of the birds mentioned in the works of Shakespeare. Mm. And they got as far as introducing the house sparrow and the starling, and they've wreaked ecological havoc across the Americas. So, if they'd gone the full way and got everything else over there, who knows how much worse it could have been.
Well, now, regular listeners to Mooney Goes Wild, and before that, the Mooney Show on RT Radio 1 in the afternoons, and who remember our guest, Paul G. Sheridan, who could tell you what was number one on the day you were born, got married, or had a special event in your life. He was always right, no matter what you asked him, and he didn't have any notes in front of him. Well, Niall, you get the Paul G. Sheridan Award for knowing it all, because I knew the answer to that question I asked you, and you are right. It is that bird, the red-billed
Quillia, or something,
well,
something like that.
Different, right, but at any rate, yeah. An estimated 1.5 billion of them. Oh my goodness, Richard, did you know the likes?
Yes, and that's the same number of as cattle. There are about 1.5 thousand million cattle, and there's a rather similar number of sheep. Due to us, the most successful large animals are those that teamed up with us. Okay, we exact a retribution at the end of the day. We kill them off quickly and eat them, but up to then, they have the happiest, most comfortable lives of any large animal in the world, with vets looking after them, things to remove their parasites, both internal and external. I mean, if St. Peter says you've got to come back as an animal as a punishment for your sins, I recommend you come back as a domestic chicken or as
Well, you're not going to last long if you come back as a domestic chicken.
Well, yeah, but these are relative, you know. You live a few months, but you live well.
Do you?
Fed and found. Mm. Well, there are some grossy
ones. Anyway, let's leave it at that.
Let's not go down that road.